And good afternoon, folks. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and Free FM 89.0 if you're listening live. Otherwise, you might be listening streaming live off Raglan Community Radio's website or listening back on podcasting sites like Spotify or Apple Podcasts, things like that. Either way, I hope you're enjoying the show, and it's a beautiful, sunny day here in Whangarei today, as I hope it is wherever you are. And today on the show, we're going to go through some primary sector headlines, followed by some weather. Then we'll have a look at some gardening to-dos, maybe some some public service announcement type things. And then we're going to concentrate mostly today on, later in the show anyways, on the boom and bust nature of the mussel industry in Aotearoa, New Zealand. All that to come on the show in the next sort of hour or so. First up, though, here's Soaked Oats, good New Zealand band. I'll play pretty much all New Zealand music again last day of May, I think it is today, New Zealand Music Month. And this one's called, a new one by them, called The Way It Works. Soaked Oats there with The Way It Works. And it's Primary Sector Headlines time here on the Over the Fence show now. And a Gisborne-based forest contracting business owner is devastated by having to pull the pin on his 23-year-old company. Robert Stubbs owns Stubbs Contracting and Forestry. It's been his life. Prior to owning the business, he spent 10 years working for others in the sector. But after much angst and thinking, he shut up shop. And now he says the market is flooded with equipment that's not selling. The market's in a downturn situation for probably the third or fourth time since the beginning of COVID, he said, and he adds, at its peak, Stubbs Contracting as a business employed up to 70 people. But that's now dropped to three harvest crews and about 25 people, and Stubbs said the business has been going backwards for some time. And it was forest contractors taking a hit. So, yeah, it's a really interesting business, the forestry one, isn't it? I mean, it's like, yeah, it comes up for a lot of flack, and there's more and more pines getting put in, but chances of them ever getting cut down are getting lower and lower because of, the carbon. Planting for carbon and those sorts of things. And of course then on top of that you've got all of the mills shutting down. I think there's one maybe still going in Kawerau, but everyone else is shut down, which is again kind of a backwards way to my mind anyway of going about it, but interesting all the same. And Waimea Community Dam's reservoir is now built and on track to supply the Tasman district with water from next summer. Waimea Water Chief Executive Mike Scott said the reservoir was closed last week in time for it to be filled up over the winter months. He expected it to be full by October, weather permitting. It's the first large dam to be constructed in New Zealand in 25 years, and the first publicly funded large dam built since Clyde Dam was finished 30 years ago. And once full, the dam will hold 13 million cubic metres of water. And Scott said it would provide the town supply and local irrigators with water security, especially in the face of climate change. And he adds, scientists tell us to expect the warming climate to create greater storm intensities and periods of lower precipitation and drier soils. And our dam will help mitigate these impacts by catching the storms and let them out through the natural systems in dry periods. So, interesting, isn't it? First like dam in 25 years we built in New Zealand. I can only imagine all the hoops I'd had to jump through to build a dam these days. But, yeah, good on them anyway. That's a dam built there, Waimea. And entries are now open for the 2023 Cobber Challenge, with organisers keen to have good representation from New Zealand. Run in Australia, this is the third year New Zealand dogs have been able to enter the competition. And farmers have until 25th of June to enter their dog, after which organisers will pick a dozen dogs to take part. Dogs will be fitted with a GPS tracker, which will record the distance travelled on farm and the speed they travel. And 3 months of data will be collected, and the three best weeks used to see who comes out top dog. Competition spokesperson Kelly Savage said they wanted a good range of dogs from different landscapes to take part. She adds, it's great to get entries from different terrains and to really showcase the work some of these dogs do. We love having New Zealand dogs involved because they vary so much to what some of the Australian working dogs do. So, the dog is interested in getting into that. You've got a couple of 3 weeks to get into that one. And New Zealand designed chambers to measure the amount of methane produced by sheep are now being rolled out in other countries. Scientists here have been breeding low-emission sheep since 2008 when they discovered that the amount of methane a sheep emits was a heritable trait. In order to figure out the low emitters from the rest, sheep were placed in chambers which measured their burps. Other countries have now started adopting the tech with the chambers in use in Norway, Ireland, Scotland and Wales. And Rob Hodgkins, a sheep farmer from Hertfordshire, just north of London, was the first to use them in England. He recently tested some of his 2,500 New Zealand Romneys. And he says it was really neat. It was like putting a sheep in a washing machine. Yeah, and you load them in and it only takes 15 minutes. They were really chill. We could tell they weren't really stressed because they weren't respirating heavily. Measured the methane, carbon dioxide and oxygen levels, and we should get the results in a couple of weeks. So, good to see New Zealand innovation going around the world and keeping with kind of sheep. A North Canterbury winery is setting up its vineyard so sheep can graze under the vines. Greystone Wine's high vines system aims to cut costs and emissions by growing grapes higher off the ground. With sheep doing the mowing and replacing the need for high emission and high cost diesel vehicles and tractors, growing grapes become cheaper, more eco-friendly and quieter. And Greystone Wine's winemaker Dom Maxwell said keeping the grapes out of reach of the sheep also meant they could not eat the fruit, which was always a worry due to the growing season. And he has the other benefits of growing higher is less frost risk in the spring season, he said. So that's great. Another innovation there from some of the vineyards, that one in North Canterbury there. All right, that'll probably do for the headlines. Now I'm going to play an older sort of New Zealand song now, and this one goes out to all the great people up there at the community house. If you're tuning in, and they get a bit of a hooey going on up there, and this is Bill Doreen and the Builders with the Alligator Song.
Way forever.
There we are. There's Bill Doreen and the Builders there with the Alligator Song. And it's weather time now on the Over the Fence Show. And a westerly quarter airflow lies over the country today. And a weakening front passes over the North Island. So that brings a few showers to the west. But starting to dry up this afternoon. And rain for the west coast of the South Island and dry in the east of the South Island. And yeah, like I said earlier, it's a beautiful day here in Whangaroa today. Outside there. And what else can we expect from the weather today? Well, let's have a look at the forecast here. And for Northland, Auckland, Waikato and the Bay of Plenty. So showers clearing up in the afternoon with sunny areas increasing in the Bay of Plenty, which is a dry day with the morning cloud breaking to mostly sunny weather. Southwesterly winds. Yeah, it's not even really that windy out there, to be honest, today. Here, anyway, in beautiful Whangaroa and looking outside the window of Raglan Community Radio HQ here on Bow Street in the Town Hall. Western North Island, including the Central North Island, morning showers clearing up with sun breaking through. The odd shower still down Palmy Ways and showers in the evening. Eastern North Island, mostly sunny, some high cloud. Down the capital, mostly sunny. Marlborough, Nelson, mostly sunny. Canterbury, mostly sunny. West Coast, cloudy with showers. South and Otago, kind of partly cloudy down those ways. So there's a brief kind of what's happening up and around the countryside. And what else can we expect from the weather? There's going to be heavy rain for the west coast as it pushes north along the west coast today. Potential to reach a warning criteria as advised by Met Service. So Thursday has a stronger front move north over the South Island with heavier rain, likely for the west coast, and perhaps also a few thunderstorms. But it looks pretty dry up here in the North Island as it goes, and it's going to be warm in the east, and eastern regions are warm for a time of the year, and tomorrow, thanks to this northwesterly airflow. The highs will likely be in the mid-teens for Otago and Canterbury down there, and late teens for Marlborough, and late teens for eastern North Island as well. And Thursday, temperature of the eastern South Island crank up into the late teens, with the eastern North Island reaching into the early 20s. So, yes, there's a... But I know there are, in a few days, it's going to be kind of messy and wet, and it's going to get colder. So enjoy the beautiful day today, and what can we expect from the rest of the week? Well, 16-degree highs expected today, 18 tomorrow, 17 Friday, then 16 Saturday, 15 Sunday, then somewhere between 12 and kind of 15 from Monday into the next week. And tonight's going to be 7 degrees, and the high tomorrow night's going to be 13 as it gets a bit cloudier. Excuse me. And then rest of the week is going to be between like 5 and 9 degrees, nighttime temperatures for the rest of the week, and it's going to be sort of cloudy a bit later. It's a little bit cloudy out there today, I guess, and then maybe some showers tomorrow, sort of rain expected Friday. Sunny day again Saturday, maybe some showers Sunday, rain back on Monday, and then sort of showery again for the rest of the week from there. So, yeah, bit of a mixed bag, but at least it's not going to be rain. It's going to be a few sunny breaks in between, which is great. And the winds today are south-westerlies. Tomorrow they're going to be westerlies, and the next day westerlies, then back to south-westerlies again on Saturday. Northerlies for Sunday, then nor'westerlies into early next week. And yeah, not much of a chance of rain today, and it's not going to be too heavy looking at it all. It's going to be at most kind of 7 mils, which is kind of into early next week. Maybe 4 mils or something like that on Friday or so they're expecting, so... Yeah, it's not heaps of rain, but a little bit here and there. And I was just talking to someone just yesterday, actually, and they said they've had a nice autumn flush of grass growth for the first time in a few years, so that's great. Just over the last couple of days. And the humidity today is 64% about. And the sunrise this morning at 7:27. It will set at 5:12 this evening. And the length of visible light is 10 hours and 42 minutes, and the actual day length is 9 hours and 45 minutes. And tomorrow will be 1 minute and 4 seconds shorter than it is today. And the moon, yes, I've seen that last couple of nights. It is 81% illuminated. It's a waxing gibbous phase of the moon. And that will rise at 2:40 and set at 2:47 in the morning, the early hours of the morning. So there's some weather for you. And now going to play for you a new song by a New Zealand band called Trophies from Marlon's Dreaming.
He's got a fear that he'll be dropped on his pants.
It's Marlon's Dreaming there with their song Trophies. Good band, aren't they? And they're actually about to go on a tour around the country. Not coming to Ragland, I don't think. Well, Hamilton, I think, but they're going to Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, a few places like that. But it's gardening time to do's here now on the Over the Fence show. And if you're gardening by the moon, today being the 31st, yes, indeed. Good time to plant strawberries in enriched soil. If you're gardening by the moon, good time to do that. And, you know, there's a few weeds and things popping up still this time of the year. So good time to crack on with that sort of thing as well. And what else can you plant, you ask yourself, this time of year here in the Waikato? Well, grab a pen and paper, ladies and gentlemen, and these things. At least some apples, apricot, blackberries, blueberries, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, calendula, carrots, cauliflower, coriander, cyclamen, daffodil, daisy, delphinium, dianthus, feijoas, garlic, hyacinths, kale leeks, kale I should say, not gale, kale leeks, lemons, lettuce, limes, mandarins, mesclun, onions, oranges, parsley, peas, pears, bobby, radish, raspberries, rhubarb, rocket, silver beet, snapdragon, spinach, strawberry, sweet pea and tulip. So there's a few things for you to do there. All right. So I'm going to play you another kind of old one, and it's the Double Happies with The Other's Way here. It's a Double Happies there with Shane Carter, of course. with their song The Other's Way. I hope you enjoyed that. I'm going to play you a new song. We're going to come back soon with some little talks and things about mussels in New Zealand, and it's a classic story of boom and bust sort of industry, which happens quite frequently, but in agriculture, horticulture, and of course fisheries and things like that. So there's trying to dig up the stuff I want to try and find for you anyways, but what I'm going to play for you now is the song I've been listening to quite a bit lately is Urusai Yatsura, a song called Plastic Ashtray. That was a song, Plastic Ashtray, there by Urusai Yatsura. I hope you enjoyed that one. And now we're going to get into, I'll start with a little bit of a history of sort of mussel farming in New Zealand, basically. It was, like I said earlier, it's there was mussels all through. Generally, two main sort of mussel places in New Zealand were sort of the Firth of Thames around there and in the Marlborough Sounds. And in the earlier days, in the sort of early 1900s and things like that, on and off, there were a lot of dredging. There was a lot of dredging going on, so they just basically just dragged dredges along the bottom of the of these places and just raked up whatever was there, right, which, of course, decimated a lot of things. And the market was mostly to the wider Auckland kind of market. Although during the 1940s, they were exporting mussels, which I didn't realise, in cans to prisoners of war over in Europe and things like that. And so, as time went by, it was pretty much all the beds got kind of wiped out and left New Zealand in the spot where there was, very little, very few mussel beds left around in the North and South Island. So Auckland University and a few of the local communities and things like that got together and tried to figure out how they can bring back the mussel beds. And here's a short little talk from the Razor Science show about how they went about that, called How New Zealand Revived Its Mussel Beds. Interesting stuff, so I hope you enjoy it.
Nearly 1,000 square kilometres of mussel beds were taken out, and when they ran out, they then moved to other places around New Zealand and wiped out other areas of mussel beds. Those mussel beds haven't recovered in the years since.
New Zealand is famed for its beautiful coastline and abundant sea life. But under the waves, the scars on the seabed tell a different story. Dredging, one of the least environmentally friendly fishing methods, has torn wild shellfish from their beds and ripped up everything else in its path, leaving a barren wasteland that may never recover.
One of the major issues worldwide is that shellfish reefs, like mussel reefs, have been destroyed on a huge scale, and you lose that conveyor belt of baby fish that are being fed into your wider environment. Your overall diversity and abundance of fish declines, and people have less fish to catch and eat.
Dr. Andrew Jeffs is a marine biologist at Auckland University, and he says around the world the loss of mussel beds has damaged the health of coastal waters. But in New Zealand, driven by communities, restoration projects are underway using empty mussel shells.
Mussels are amazing because they can form these reef structures which become like living habitats themselves. They're like coral reef made up of living organisms.
Dr. Jeffs calls mussels the superheroes of the sea. A single mussel can filter up to 250 litres of seawater a day. They shelter small marine life and provide food to the hungry fish. These bivalves can attach themselves to surfaces and each other with threads called byssus. This allows them to adapt to different habitats, whether it's being farmed on ropes or growing naturally on the seabed and rocks. They are also great carbon sequesters. With the rising levels of acidity in our oceans, mussel shells absorb carbon as they grow, around 218 kilograms per ton. In the North Island, near the city of Auckland, is an area known as the Hauraki Gulf that covers 1.2 million hectares. It's home to a myriad of islands and five marine reserves. But overfishing in the past has cleared several areas.
Nearly 1,000 square kilometres of mussel beds were taken out. And when they ran out, the market was still there, but the mussels weren't. So they then moved to other places around New Zealand and wiped out other areas of mussel beds. Those mussel beds haven't recovered in the years since. So the fishery died out in the 1980s, and since then we haven't seen a recovery.
And their loss has been keenly felt by coastal communities who came to Dr. Jeffs asking for help to restore the beds of the native New Zealand green-lipped mussel.
A community group approached me and said, you know, we want to do something about putting these mussel beds back. Can you give us a hand? Can you, do some research on it to see whether or not it's working when we go ahead and do it? From that initial approach, we've carried on working with community groups, with local Māori tribes.
The idea was to create an artificial reef of old mussel shells that living mussels could attach to. Whose idea was it to use old mussel shells?
It's been well used for oyster restoration overseas, but it hasn't been suggested for mussels in New Zealand. So it was really a matter of giving what's worked for oysters to see whether it'll work for mussels here in New Zealand.
The support they've had has been overwhelming.
We've got companies donating mussels. We've got companies providing us with boats for free. They're aware of what the positive benefits of having a mussel reef in place are, and they're keen to see those benefits coming back.
Beds need adult mussels to produce baby mussels, but they also need something to bind to. So PhD student Emily Benjamin is designing and implementing three restoration projects, putting mussels back where they were historically found in the Marlborough Sounds, a system of drowned river valleys formed in the last ice age at the tip of the South Island.
New Zealand's green-lipped mussel is unique in many ways. It's beautiful. It has a very distinct green lip on the outside where most of the world is used to seeing the blue or black mussel. And also the Greenland mussels get a lot bigger, and so they're great for farming. And it's become a big fishery for New Zealand, and it creates a lot of revenue.
We see video of the Marlborough Sounds, and it looks beautiful. But is it a different situation under the water, and is that due to the mussels being taken away?
In some places where the mussels were severely over-harvested, we do see that because mussels used to filter the water and bind the sediment, we now see that there is much more barren underwater habitats that are more muddy and less inhabited overall. And those are the places that we look for to restore the mussels to.
Last year, with the help of multiple different groups, companies and authorities, Emily started the restoration project in Pelorus Sound.
We put down about 12 tons of recycled shell, but with the ultimate goal that we would have about a 20 centimeter thick layer along the seafloor to put the mussels on top of. And then we went down with our rakes and we attempted to rake the shell into these large rectangle areas. And just after one day of the shells being deployed, you could see as I was swimming along that the recycled shell had binded some of the sediment and actually made the visibility in the water just from me diving was better. So I felt that was sort of a big moment for me because I thought, okay, I think this is going to work and the mussels are going to be happy on this shell layer.
The next step is to put mussels on the shells, and Emily has every reason to feel confident after the success of similar projects in the Hauraki Gulf. In 2012, the Mussel Reef Restoration Trust was formed, and so far, Revive Our Gulf has put down around 180 tons of mussels.
So we grow mussels on a mussel farm, and then we harvest them, sort them out, and place them on the seafloor to form a bed. And so we've been working at different ways of deploying them on the seabed, trying them at different sites, putting them in muddy sites versus less muddy sites, putting them in exposed sites and less exposed sites to see how well they do and to work out what's going to work best in terms of trying to establish a new mussel bed.
But the Marlborough Sounds at the top of the South Island has a different marine environment to the Hauraki Gulf, so the methods have been adjusted. Is that the first time in the South Island that you've tried dropping old mussel shells?
Yes. And in fact, I suspect it's the first anywhere in the world. I haven't seen any other literature of deploying mussel shells to create a new seabed habitat to then put live mussels on to try and get them established more effectively.
In the Gulf, the mussels and the environment are flourishing.
We know that the beds are stabilising the sediment and altering the way the sediment is taken out of the water column and put down in the seafloor. We also know that excessive nutrient coming from fertiliser off the land, they are utilising that nutrient and actually breaking it down. And we also know that the beds have somewhere between 5 and 10 times more juvenile and small fishes living amongst the habitat.
Internationally, these projects are attracting a lot of attention, and Dr. Jeffs and his colleagues have contributed to a global guidebook on how to restore mussel reefs. The ecological benefits will continue to be monitored in the Gulf, while the project in Pelorus Sound is just beginning. Emily and the team gathered 20 tons of adult mussels and readied them for their new home at two different locations. Down below in the turquoise waters were 12 rectangular plots, 6 on shells and 6 on the muddy seabed to compare results. It's rewarding work that Emily hopes will see the marine environment flourish for generations.
My dream would be to take my grandkids to the places where I had put the mussels down and be able to scuba dive with them and to see that the mussels are still doing okay and to see new larval recruitment and basically that the mussels will have different generations just like I will.
Thanks for watching.
All right, there we are, folks. That's How New Zealand Arrived with Mussels Beard, which came out in, from the Razor Science Show in 2 years ago in 2021. Interesting stuff, isn't it? And I'm going to come back with another thing from Niwa after this one by The Clean called Outside the Cage. We'll be right back. All right, folks, here we are. There was a clean there with Outside the Cage. And now I'm going to play for you along a similar theme. This one's from Niwa, New Zealand. Again, came out 2021, so not so long ago. It's called Rewilding Greenlit Mussels, and this is mostly based down in the beautiful Marlborough Sounds.
Marlborough Sounds is a beautiful place. It's been the place where a lot of people have made a livelihood, either off the land or the sea. When you spent long enough in a place like this, yeah, you have an affection for it. It gets inside you, I suppose, and being able to take care of it is just something that comes naturally to a lot of people. I think everybody understands that it's important to contribute back to the environment. You can't just take, you've got to give.
Cavlach's described as the mussel capital of, or the greenlit mussel capital of the world, of New Zealand, and you can feel that. When I talk to people here, you can feel how much mussels mean to them, how much it's meant to their family, how much they want to see mussels both for aquaculture and for the environment come together. My name is Trevin Toon.
My name is Emily Benjamin, and I'm working on a project
trying to bring wild mussels back to the Marlborough Sounds. So they used to be very common here, and then their populations experienced a huge decline. So our goal here is to bring them back, figuring out the best way we can do that.
So the idea for the Pelorus Mussel Restoration Project actually came from a couple of mussel farmers. So they realised that overfishing of the wild beds in the 1960s, 70s and 80s had caused a decline, a significant decline in the wild population.
What came out of that really was the idea of perhaps restoring the local mussel beds here in the Marlborough Sounds back to something similar to what they were. I think everybody agreed that it needed to be local, because we've all got megatons of mussels. I mean, shivers, we've got 1,000 tonnes of mussels sitting out there right now that we could use, but we really wanted that local strain, and that's the key.
Working with the marine farmers, we developed this project so that we could put these farmed mussels back to the seafloor and try to restore the habitats, but then also to maybe jumpstart some sort of natural recovery process.
From an environmental perspective, it's a good, healthy, positive thing to do, and reasonably easy from a mussel farming perspective because they're such a robust shellfish.
So the usual mussel farming process involves these long ropes of mussels draped into the seafloor, held up by big floats, and then there'll be these large mussel harvesting boats that come up, grab one end of the rope that has all these mussels growing on it, and then they'll take that through something called a declumper or a harvester, and that will shear those mussels off of the rope, and you end up with these nice clean mussels, which is great if we want to eat them, but not so great when we want to restore them. What we have to do differently when we use mussels for restoration is that we want them to be as clumped as they can be so that when they get on the seabed, they have the best chance of surviving.
We've had a wide variety of farmers involved in this project, and that includes Sanford for this deployment.
Today we had Simon Pooley of Just Mussels. He donated these mussels to the project.
And a lot of other companies helped us as well.
There's been all kinds of offers of knowledge and cash and in-kind support, so it's fantastic.
We harvested 5 tons of farmed mussels and helped make sure that they got to their final place for restoration.
The mussels sort of fall down and create this square sort of plot. And that's the plot that we then look to monitor. So mussels are really incredible animals. They themselves filter water and bind sediment, but they also create infrastructure on the seabed. And so when we put the mussels back to this environment that they used to be found in, it's super important because a lot of animals will move in and these mussels will create habitats, increase biodiversity, or even provide food for some animals. So when we drop down via scuba, we measure the length and the width of each plot. We put down smaller quadrats to count all of the mussels inside to look at density, which helps us determine survival. And then we also collect mussels to monitor their length and condition. Basically, we find that once we put the mussels onto the seabed, they sort of trap the sediment and bind it. We've seen really high numbers of animals moving into the beds and creating habitat. And we've even seen an increase in different fish. And then dropping down on these mussels that were just deployed yesterday, I already saw some sea cucumbers moving into the bed. We saw some triple fin sort of fluttering around. It kind of made me smile because the mussels had already been building homes even just after one day.
As a mussel farmer, it's, and having been a mussel farmer for most of my life, it's very close to home, and to see natural mussel beds restored is probably one of the best things to happen around here.
From the perspective of Tine Tangaroa, Fisheries New Zealand, any efforts that restore and improve the healthy marine environment are really important. We also love this project because it's just a great example of integrating commercial activity with an environmental outcome. So we wish the marine farmers, Niwa, and everyone involved all the best.
Somebody the other day pulled in and said, "You've got a lot of marine farming companies helping you out." And I was like, yeah, it's been really, really amazing effort from everybody involved. Yeah, that's my favorite part of the project.
All right, folks, here we are. That was Rewilding Green-Lip Mussels, of course, based down the Marlborough Sounds there, and that was from Niwa. Yeah, like I said earlier, it came out in 2021, and us humans are fascinating species, destructive but ingenious at the same time. So, I don't know, we're interesting, aren't we? And so I hope you enjoyed that anyway, and it's an ongoing interesting story, and you can only say good luck, really. And, yes, it seems to be working out well anyway, the preliminary results that it is. And also, I did come across some research somewhere, this is back to the Firth of Thames again, where if it wasn't for all the mussel farms out in the Firth of Thames, all the silt and things like that coming down the Waiho River through the Waikato, it could easily, clog up and the Firth itself. So, and as you would have picked up on those little talks there, that mussels filter a lot of sediment, and so yes, it's almost an essential part of the ecosystem now, rightly or wrongly, to keep the water reasonably clean in the Firth of Thames. So interesting stuff, and I hope you enjoyed those yarns. I'm now going to play for you an Alex Bathgate song called Glide. We'll be right back. All right, folks, that's Alec Bathgate there with a song called Glide. Of course, he was a long-time collaborator with the late, great Chris Knox and a few of his different bands and things like that. And that's pretty much it from the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Ka kite. Have a great week, everybody. It's going to be a little sunny, a little dry. Where we are, have a lovely time. Look after yourselves. Look after each other. And, yeah, have fun out there. And take it easy. And I think Prince Harry's coming in today if you're listening on regular community radio. Otherwise, have a really love your day and rest of the week. Take care. Ka kite.